Questions 14 to 16 are based on a report on the world-changing climate. You now have 15 seconds to read questions 14 to 16.
Let me begin this commentary on the world's changing climate by saying that climatology, the study of long-range trends in weather, is at best an inexact science. It is based on hypothesis. Currently, a major argument among climatologists concerns the long-range weather outlook for the Earth. The question that occupies them so much is this: is the Earth cooling off, or is it in fact heating up? Is the Earth going through a cooling trend or a warming trend? A cooling trend could bring mass starvation and fuel shortage. But on the other hand, a warming trend could melt the polar ice caps and cause flooding of the coastal cities of the world. In either case, the consequences for man might be alarming and possibly disastrous. Let me just point out that rains and floods of record proportions have recently struck some geographic areas around the world, while droughts have devastated other areas. Climatologists in general are truly puzzled by the change taking place today. As I already said, some parts of the world are cooling off, while others are growing warmer. Climatologists hope to discover why this is so, and perhaps to predict what will come next. A number of climatologists believe the Earth is, in fact, undergoing a cooling trend and is returning to the conditions of the Little Ice Age. This Little Ice Age could best be described as the cold, damp weather that was the characteristic of the period from approximately the 14th century to the mid-19th century. Climatologists generally agree that whatever the long-term trend in the Earth's climate is, we are witnessing a period of increasing climatological change, a period that is making seasonal weather predictions and agricultural planning more and more difficult, if not altogether impossible. You now have 30 seconds to check your answers to questions 14 to 16. Questions 17 to 20 are based on an introductory talk about manufacturing. You have 20 seconds to read questions 17 to 20.
Manufacturing includes all occupations that are involved in making products by hand or by machine. These products range from simple plastic or wooden objects, such as clothespins or toothpicks, to highly complicated electronic computers. Manufactured goods also vary in size, from microscopic electronic parts to giant aircraft carriers and supertankers. About two-thirds of the workers in manufacturing actually make products. These employees include craft workers, skilled and semi-skilled workers, and unskilled laborers. Craft workers are highly skilled in such trades as tool designing, tool and die making, and tailoring. Many craft workers supervise other employees. Skilled workers, who include engravers, machinists, printers, and welders, use special job skills to make items or to operate machinery. Semi-skilled workers include machine operators and assistants to skilled workers. Many semi-skilled occupations require workers to repeat the same task again and again. Unskilled laborers perform jobs that require no special skills, such as sorting, packing, or moving materials. Most employees in manufacturing work in factories or shops. Common working conditions include high levels of dust, heat, or noise. Some factory jobs require great strength or standing for long periods. Many scientists, engineers, and technicians also work in manufacturing. Scientists perform laboratory tests and other research to develop new products and improve old ones. Engineers design and test airplanes, automobiles, household appliances, machine parts, and countless other products. They also design production equipment and improve manufacturing techniques. Some technicians assist scientists and engineers. Others plan or supervise production activities, such as packing or storing products. The manufacturing cluster also includes management workers. They develop and enforce company policies, plan and direct production activities, purchase equipment and materials, or work in labor relations or public relations. You now have 40 seconds to check your answers to questions 17 to 20. That is the end of Part B. Part C. You will hear a talk given by one of the compilers of a book. As you listen, you must answer questions 21 to 30 by writing no more than three words in the space provided on the right. You will hear the talk twice. You now have 60 seconds to read questions 21 to 30.
This book is an attempt to introduce the reader to the United States. It intends to give a concise but fairly well-rounded overview of present-day American society. Not only a picture of surface phenomena, but insights into American culture and insights about the American people. Various aspects of American life are presented through articles written mainly by Americans themselves or by Westerners familiar with the United States. Most were written by scholars or specialists on the topic of the field. A number of articles were written by sociologists. This gives a perspective that goes beyond the common articles written for the average tourist. For the person with passing curiosity, or for the ordinary man in the street. A number of articles were also selected with the idea of presenting different, sometimes conflicting points of view about the same topic. This, it is hoped, will help the reader to gain better understanding and to help him draw his own conclusions. It should be stressed that the viewpoints of the various authors are not necessarily those of the compilers of this book. We may agree with all of some articles, only partially with others, and possibly disagree considerably with a few of the selections. To allow the reader to use his own judgment, we have generally kept the articles in their original form. If changes were made, they were to make the language easier or to make the articles more manageable for the reader. Most of the articles in this book were selected on the basis of the following criteria. 1. Their suitability for giving accurate information about a topic or some aspect of the topic. These articles should help present a well-rounded picture of the whole. In this respect, we have sometimes given preference to an earlier article rather than a later one, if the former gives a more insightful or a more comprehensive treatment of the subject. 2. Their appeal to the ordinary reader. These articles should be authoritative and reliable, yet not too elementary. The contents should be of interest to most readers. 3. Their linguistic quality and degree of difficulty. The level for which these articles are intended is college students of English. Other college students with a fairly good command of English, and the general reader interested in the U.S. and with fairly good comprehension of the language. 4. Their general relevance to Chinese readers or Chinese society. These articles should have some general significance to China, either present or future, and not be totally irrelevant. Obviously, no one book can give a completely comprehensive picture or description of such a vast and complex nation. Many readers may disagree with our choice of topics. Most likely, a number will say we have left out important ones. Many may feel we did not use our best judgment in selecting the articles. We must admit that we did not always agree among ourselves. We were further restricted by the limited amount of materials to choose from. Needless to say, we welcome suggestions and criticisms from our readers. And in spite of all its shortcomings, if the book has helped the reader to gain some insight and understanding about the United States and its people, and has stimulated the reader to go further and to study more, then, in a modest way, this book will have accomplished much of what it was intended to do. Now you are going to hear the talk a second time. You now have 100 seconds to check your answers to questions 21 to 30. This is the end of Part C.